Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I am Become Death, Destroyer of Worlds, and I am with...
a member of the Communist Party. Love that we both went Oppenheimer on that one. Neither of us went Barbie. Could have said Just Ken. I'm Just Ken.
Just Ken was one of my idea. I have one already Barbie themed for the last one. So I'm saving my Barbie for my last one.
Very fair.
Yeah. But we're here talking about the one and only Barbenheimer. We're here. We made it. It's time.
It's time. Barbenheimer for the win.
Yeah.
The long awaited Barbenheimer. We've been talking about it.
Almost as long awaited as the atomic bomb was when they were making it.
Yeah.
Very similar.
Almost. our podcast definitely has a lot of parallels with the atomic
the American
bomb.
Government in World War II. Yeah, definitely. We're very close in our morals, in our way of seeing the world, with a little bit of what's that guy, Winston Churchill. He's not American, but you know, we can sprinkle him in there too. Before we get into our spectacular, we have to get into last week's question of the week. I don't know if anyone remembered, but Mission Impossible did release last week.
It did.
Seems like people are, it's getting left in the dust.
Yeah, I'm going to go see it again. My boy Tom Cruise, who
tough
I do not
for
support, but I do support.
Because you really are not a fan of his movies, but his beliefs
in Scientology, I
very,
very
cool.
Adhere to. I think that the work he does for the Church of Scientology is very impressive. And yeah. Does a lot for the world. And I appreciate his stance on life. Just kidding. But yeah, I think I'll definitely go see it again. Because I have now watched through number 6. And so.
Wow, that's so exciting for you. So now you can see it with the full context.
I'm prepared to take my dad to go see it. And now that we've watched all the first 6, and I'm very excited for a rewatch for sure.
Do you have a new number 1? What was at least of now? I know you're going to rewatch
so
the new
one. I did update my ranking, so I have, again, Mission Impossible 2 at the bottom, Mission Impossible 3 right after that above it, Mission Impossible at number 5. Now, the thing here is that I want to know is that everything from 5 and up, the top 5 are
exactly
4 stars and above.
Yeah,
so like
bangers.
Like, Mission Impossible 2 was easily, a 1-star movie. Mission Impossible 3 was about a 3-star movie, I would say. It's mid-tier for me. And then everything else, Ghost Protocol is the next one. I've got that at 4 with 4 stars. Then I have Rogue Nation at 3. I would probably say that is a 4.5-star movie.
Rogue Nation's fire. And then we have the Fall... Which one's above right now? Fallout or Dead Reckoning?
So I have Dead Reckoning at 2 right now.
Okay, yeah. I think that's basically so close to mine, actually.
Yeah, I have that at 2. That's also a 4.5-star movie for me. And then Fallout is also a 4.5-star movie for me. And that's what I have at number 1.
Fallout is... I really wish I had seen that in the theater.
I know.
Fallout is a very cool
movie. I would
have
loved to see that in IMAX.
Very cool. Even with Henry Cavill, he can't take it down.
The good thing is that he is literally such a fucking idiot in that movie.
Especially after the first 20 minutes, he talks rarely.
Oh my god!
It helps.
And his character is so dumb that it makes it so much easier. Again, this happens in Barbie, which we'll talk about. But there's a certain actor, another who is in that nice little superhero genre who actually is a terrible actor. Speaking of Henry Cavill, so
yeah, and terrible person. Yeah,
yeah.
Just
so
real,
it makes
win.
It real easy when they play a character that's also a dumbo.
Very similar to James Franco in Spring Breakers, almost the same, so true bestie.
It's like they're not even acting. But yeah, let's read our answers to the question of the week. The question was, what stunts do you want to see? Tom Cruise perform the next Dead Reckoning movie. On Spotify, our good friend Joe Miller said, climb a redwood, no hands.
Honestly, sure.
Honestly, I could see
get
him
to
do
the top
it.
Of a tree, and then they cut the tree down.
Oh, as the tree's falling
as the tree's
in
falling.
Slow motion, he's yeah. running up the
on
tree.
The
I could see it. Like it's falling in slow motion and he's like yeah. running on the tree. And then right when it starts falling quicker or off a cliff or something, he
like jumps. Epic.
I could see it. I would be epic. Did we get any answers on Instagram?
Instagram, Noah said sword fight, which I feel like we got a taste of the sword fight in part one, which I like.
We've seen some good knife fighting for sure.
That's true. I like when they mix it up a little with like the combat.
Yeah,
besides
I agree.
Just hand-to-hand and gun fights. So I think there's not enough sword fighting in movies.
That's a great point. I would love to see some sword fighting. I think that would be pretty iconic of Tom Cruise.
A sword fight on a redwood. As it's falling.
Crazy. I like
kind
it.
Of what's the movie where they the Pirates of the Caribbean movie where they sword fight like on the rolling thing? Is that the second
yes.
one or the third one?
That
That's a cool
is
scene.
The second one, I believe. I don't know. We just said that it's been ages since we've seen that.
Yeah, the second episode in a row we mentioned Pirates of the Caribbean. So yeah, we'll have another question at the end of this episode relating to either Barbie or Oppenheimer, or maybe both. Who knows?
Maybe
we
both.
Don't know yet.
Would you feel bad if you created an atomic bomb that killed hundreds of thousands of people? That's the question of the week.
Yeah,
would you feel that it was a moral issue?
If you created the atomic bomb?
Would you? Yeah, I would. I was thinking that the whole time. I was like, I would simply rather die. Like,
I would have gone out with the test. Like, they test it and I would have walked out there.
Yeah.
Boom.
Anyway,
with on that light note, let's dive right in.
Yeah, let's talk these box office numbers. So obviously this weekend has been insane. Everyone has seen these movies. I feel like every single person I know, even people who are not film goers,
yes.
have gone and seen this movie and Oppenheimer, which is
yes.
wild. Like, people, friends of mine who are totally not film people went and saw both. And I was like, that is kind of iconic. I love
that. It's epic. It's so cool.
So Barbie opened in 4,243 theaters at this point. I believe these numbers were posted yesterday, late afternoon, by Box Office Mojo. We're recording this Monday. $162 million domestic. Oppenheimer made $82.5 million domestic. It did open in about 600 less theaters. So 3,610 theaters. Worldwide, Barbie has made $356 million.
What?
Point three. And Oppenheimer has made $180.4 million, which is really incredible, honestly.
Really great. Yeah.
So for opening weekends, Barbie ranks 11 worldwide of the year so far. So this is above Dial of Destiny and right below Elemental. So I would believe this will be in theaters for at least through September, I would guess.
Yes.
I think that this will easily hit the top five. I would not be surprised. Mario stands.
I think Mario will keep it.
I think Mario will hold out the year, honestly. I don't see anything beating out Mario. It was
Wahoo!
Like 1.3 billion or something worldwide.
I'm wondering, do you think Barbie will hit the billion? That's the real question. Well, Barbie hit the big B.
I think,
you know?
The triple B, it could. it could. I think that it could. Because here's why. There are people who I know who have already seen this movie two or three times.
Yeah. I think this is a repeat watch, unlike Ben Shapiro thinks.
I think that a lot of people are going to go see it again. If you follow me on Letterboxd, you know I was not a big fan of Barbie.
Wait, spoilers, come on,
for the review. We're going to talk about. But I almost even went and saw it again today.
I'm going to see it again.
I'll probably see it again. I'm seeing Oppenheimer again first, and then I'll see Mission Impossible again first, and then I will go see Barbie again.
Yeah, I know people, we're not really talking about Barbie yet. I guess we kind of are. I don't know. But I know people are like the soundtrack is not like as good as people said they wanted, but I feel like some of like the top songs are hitting right now.
Yeah, and I mean,
you listen to that Dua Lipa song and you just want to watch the movie again.
The Billie Eilish song has been all over my For You page today.
It's too depressing of a song for me.
It is depressing. And all the videos are also depressing. And I'm like, I cannot.
That's why I go to Dance the Night and then the Barbie World remix are the two. And then the Charlie XCX song is also
good. Like the Barbie World. But yeah, so Oppenheimer is really not that far behind Barbie. It ranks 16 worldwide.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, so it's right above Scream 6 and right under Dungeons and Dragons. I would imagine this definitely hits the top 10 over the next week. It was both of these were pretty close to the ones right above it. So I think that we're going to see a big rise in these. I think the numbers will not drop over the next weekend. I think we're going to, unlike Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning with the, I think it was like, what, 65% drop off?
Yeah, it's tough. These don't have a lot of competition like coming up, like the Meg 2. Whatever, like, I don't feel like
Meg
that's going to take much.
Haunted Mansion, which really will be mostly kids seeing that. I think other people will see it. I'll go see it. But I think that, like, that's going to be primarily kids. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles could do well, I think. That's one that I've been excited for. But, yeah, I mean, this was really ideal timing. I think releasing them the same weekend is the best thing they could have possibly done. They let it happen, and I think it was so smart by both studios to keep it locked, because just the juxtaposition of the two movies and what everyone did with it and like making content about it, I think really just gave both of these movies an extra trajectory. I think it's been a long time, probably since Avengers Endgame, since I've seen an event movie or weekend like this.
Yeah.
Even with Oppenheimer, I think Barbie obviously is the event movie of the year and the event movie of the decade. But I,
for now, who knows,
else will come. But I find it hard to see something like, I mean, we can kind of jump into it now, but I went to a Thursday afternoon screening of this, opening day, 3 p.m. Theater was pretty packed for a 3 p.m. showing. In good old Winchester, Virginia. And probably everyone, I would say 80% of the theater was wearing pink.
Yeah.
And I just think that that's so impressive.
And you walk through like the AMC or wherever you are, and like even in the lobby, everyone's wearing pink. And it's like, it's insane. It's crazy.
It's pretty fucking incredible. I
look
when
what
I
happens
was sitting
when we
there,
come together as a community, guys.
Yeah,
look
and
what
I wonder
we can do.
How, like, I wonder how much of it is, I don't know. I've seen some tweets about like this post-COVID sort of world where like people just want to have fun. And I'm like, that's true. But I think
girls also just want to have fun.
Girls also just want to have fun, which we've been talking. We can definitely touch on that. We've been talking about that for a while of marketing movies to women.
Oh, how girls just want to have fun. Yes,
how girls just want to have fun. Like, you know what I mean? Like how women can drive a box office and have proven it again and again, from Titanic to Twilight to every other Hunger Games, you know, movies under the sun, that like, it's like studios just need to promote women. Did you know that women watch movies too?
I didn't until I went to see Barbie and my eyes were opened.
And you saw all the pink, and all of a sudden
I was like, wait, am I
contributing to the patriarchy by watching movies? I don't know.
Movies? Question mark? Yeah, so I think I really feel like this is a huge moment for movies. Definitely the biggest, the most like feeling that movies are back at the center of culture than, like you said, since Endgame, definitely since the pandemic. Even more than, I think Top Gun Maverick was a completely different feeling, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
That felt more like a slow build, and like, just like, it was cool that like, it was out all summer, and like, people were loving it.
Top Gun Maverick walked.
So Barbie and Oppenheimer could run. Yeah, I agree. I think it's felt really cool. And like you said, a lot of people, even if people haven't seen it, everyone I've talked to has heard of it, or like everyone I talked to asked me like, oh, so what do you think about the Barbie and Oppenheimer? Like, so people, even like if they haven't seen it, everyone is, I think, at least aware, which is like a huge deal.
Yeah.
That people are actually aware of movies that are coming out, especially like Oppenheimer, which is not like one that is a,
It's been really exciting. And like I said, it's been exciting to have people that I'm friends with talk to me about movies who I never talk to about movies. And then they're like, oh, hey, like, you like movies. What did you think of Oppenheimer? And I'm like, hold up, hold up, hold up. Someone else besides Noah is talking to me about a movie right now? No way.
What the heck, guys? What is happening?
What the heck? I can't even believe that people were talking to me about
movies.
People are
watching Oppenheimer.
Can you believe that people were watching Barbie? Okay, anyway.
Let's jump into Barbie.
Yeah, both summaries of these movies, both of these were like one sentence long. I pulled them from IMDb.
Well, what do you need besides just the movie's called Barbie?
What do you need? So the summary for Barbie. Barbie suffers a crisis that leads her to question her world and her existence. And
same.
That's the
honestly.
Summary. Very valid.
Such like a valid take. We're going to keep these at the beginning of each review. We'll go spoiler free and then we'll jump into spoilers. Just because these are very new movies and obviously, I think surprisingly, there is a lot to spoil, even in a movie like Oppenheimer, which is a historical
biopic, like, yeah.
Biopic, yes. But I still do think there are things that you shouldn't know going in Oppenheimer.
Yeah, they did drop a bomb. Unfortunately, that's spoiled for us. Sorry.
Okay, yeah, let's go into Barbie then. So, very highly anticipated movie by us, by many. I feel like I've been waiting for this movie for a long time because it got announced pretty early on.
So long.
Both this and Oppenheimer were one where like every day a new cast member would come out and it was just like such a long process to get to where we are now.
Yeah, I can't even think of a world before knowing about these movies. I'm trying to think of like when we first would have heard about these movies and it's probably like 2019 or something, but 2020, something like that. But it's been a long time coming.
Well, I mean, Greta Gerwig announced it pretty early after Little Women, and Little Women was 4 years ago in December.
And we saw, you know, a lot of behind the scenes pictures, the photos of Ryan and Margot Robbie at the beach. Rollerblading was a big deal. And I remember those pictures coming out on Twitter everyone being like, oh my God, the costumes, like what the heck? And then with Ryan Gosling's press tour, it's just been like, the build has been incredible.
The build is a movie in itself, honestly. It's a whole nother thing that we could just
talk about.
Yeah,
I feel like I feel like we're going to see a lot of studios try to recreate this sort of build and it's going to fall flat because I feel like this was such an organic and natural escalation of the audience, especially like Gen Z carrying both of these, that I think that it cannot ever be recreated what happened with these movies.
Warner Brothers said that they started prep for the marketing campaign in January, and they called it Operation Barbie Summer. So they definitely were really, like, from the beginning, had a
big
plan.
They
did it. And
it
worked.
Whoever was the director of their marketing campaign needs, like, a major bonus.
Major bonus
to the director of marketing of Warner Brothers.
I saw this on Friday, 11 a.m., so pretty early.
Did the double bill.
I did do the double bill. So there wasn't a ton of people. There was a decent amount of people, especially for 11 a.m. on a Friday, like which you would expect nobody. Very unfortunate. There was three teenage boys sitting a little down in the row next to us that did talk and laugh, especially during like the main monologue. Like, and I almost shouted at them, but. That's so unfortunate, but either way, I really enjoyed this movie. I was really excited for this going in anticipated. I knew people were giving it good reviews, but it's hard to really know what to expect from this, I think, because I don't know, you know that there's going to be something beyond like just what the trailers show. And I just didn't know. I didn't know, like, okay, is it all, like, in the real world? Is it, like, just a little bit in the... Like, I really didn't know much about what was going to happen. And so I was excited. I just didn't know, like, what the story was going to be. But I really enjoyed it. I think It, I mean, okay, if you count her first movie, like the one that she did like Nights and Weekends, then it's not her worst movie. I do think it is Greta Gerwig's of the three, like the worst movie that she's made, but that's putting it up against Lady Bird, which I think is like my third favorite movie of all time and a 5 out of 5. And Little Women, which I think is a movie I've also had more time to sit with and is pretty well understood to be like a modern, like classic of like like that kind of storytelling, literature storytelling. So that's like a big statement. I still gave it like a 4 out of 5. I really enjoyed it. There are issues that obviously it, like every movie has, that we'll talk about. But overall, I really just like had a really fun time. Ryan Gosling knocked it out of the park. He exceeded my expectations somehow. Like, yeah, just an somehow incredible performance from him. And I really was surprised by even like a couple of the places that it ended up going to, I guess, thematically. That's really the end of like my like non-spoiler spiel, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, non-spoiler spiel. Yeah, so I notoriously apparently did not like this.
Yeah, notoriously. You are one of two that have rated, no, technically three on Letterboxd I follow that rate it, have rated it under like three.
Yeah. And even like I saw it fairly early on, so I was able, like, there were not a lot of low reviews when I saw it. Like, I scrolled through Letterboxd for days, like, yeah, you know what I mean? And like everything was a 5 or 4, and I was like, God, I just like, I don't know. I was, maybe I went in with my expectations too high. There are a lot of things I did really, really like about it. So I want to preface by saying that.
I think all technical things we can just say automatically, like technically it's amazing.
Yeah.
I think set design.
I think like costume everything design, but cinematography, I would say.
Especially in the real world. Cinematography felt flat.
I think
in the real
cinematography
world
felt very Netflix. Sorry. I just felt like,
I wonder who shot this. I don't know who shot this.
I actually just felt like it could have been a lot more interesting with the cinematography. I don't know if it was just because of how much they put into the sets that kind of was something that maybe didn't get as much attention to detail because so much went into other technical aspects. I don't think it took away from the film by any means, but I wish it would have impressed me more with the caliber of filmmaking from this creator. Yeah, set design, I mean, incredible. I would say this is easily the front runner for set design of the year. I think there's been some other great sets this year, but I think that this, it was just so impressive the way that they made the set. I think the costuming also was incredible, for the Barbies and for the Kens. Like, I just thought, especially going off of old Barbie toys, I just think that creating those and bringing those to life, I think that those both technical aspects are really incredible. I think the performances were all great, apart from maybe Simu's,
but again, like you said, it's very,
it works because
it really works.
He's playing himself. In terms of themes, I think there's, without spoiling, there's one storyline that really, really, like, really was the one I did not like, and I think if that had been cut out, I would have given this a 3.5. It just like that this one specific thing created on me. I don't want to spoil it, but I think in terms of themes, I think it does say a lot. I think what's really hard about a movie like this is a lot of people understand feminism, like the main basic feminism 101, and you know what applies to feminism, especially in a workplace or in, you know, a place where, like, the real world versus the Barbie land versus this sort of dream reality, mm-hmm, of having women be, you know, more than equal and have everything that they should have. And I think that most people who are going to see this already understand and support that. I think that they're
most people. Yes.
Yeah. I think
obviously, as we've seen.
But I think for me, because of that, and this is my personal opinion, because I know this hit for a lot of people. But I think to me, because of that, it felt a little shallow. because it felt like a lot of messaging that I understand and have seen for a while. And I wish it would have tapped into kind of a deeper, like, which people are probably going to be mad at me and be like, oh, well, it was deep to me. And it's like, that's fine. But I just wish that they had more organically tapped into some of these little things, which I'll share later, that I really liked about it. And I think that that would have made it a lot more powerful in the messaging, because I felt like she kind of had to write the screenplay in a way that was like, well, all these people will see it and like it. And so, it, you know, but then there's people who, like, we have to sort of give this message to for the first time, or make it more adaptable to a broad audience. And I felt like that lost some of what I would have liked more about it if it had given the opportunity to be more complex.
So do we want to just jump? I feel like we're not going to change anyone's mind, like, spoiler-wise.
No.
So let's just I feel like we should just jump in. Do you want to share, if we can just kind of keep the, like, the thought train going, do you want to share the storyline?
Yes, yes. Okay, so everything with Will Ferrell made me want to throw up my guts. I don't know what it is about it.
I don't think you're a Will Ferrell fan, honestly.
Yeah, like, I really like him in Elf, and I think a lot of that is probably nostalgia from growing up on that movie. I really like him also in, there's like one or two random SNL bits that I
he's
like
a fun,
him
there's some
in.
Like the cowbell bit is,
yeah,
funny.
Yeah. And I just think maybe if he had not been cast in this role, maybe that would have been it for me. But I just felt like, I don't know. I think for me, the biggest aspect was I really, really loved everything with the mother and daughter. I just thought that that line of storytelling was so good. I loved the scene on the bus stop. I loved when Barbie realized it was the mom she was looking for and not the kid. Like, I cried at that part. And, like, those were the things to me that were very, like, naturally moving and really, like, pushed a great theme and spoke to what it was speaking to in an organic way, an authentic way. And then I just felt like a lot of the stuff with Will Ferrell almost to me felt like a different movie. Like, it just felt like it was just there to maybe reach the wider audience with kind of a more comedic element. I'm not really sure, because I feel like they could have accomplished everything without that whole, like, board of directors, and still had Ken be kind of the sort of main antagonist in kind of him going to the real world and seeing the patriarchy in the society without having to add Will Ferrell's role in, because then I think it just got a little confusing in the end, then in the conclusion, when it was like they already sort of solved a lot of stuff with Ken and Barbie, and then, like, Barbie had her arc moment, sort of, and then, like, Will Ferrell kind of showed up and was like, okay, we're doing, like, you know what I mean? Like, I just felt like his whole storyline was just tacked on for some reason, and it didn't feel like it fit with the rest of the screenplay to me. And so if all that had been cut, this probably would have been like a 3.5 star for me, because I also think, like, it needed to be just a little bit shorter. And I loved Margot Robbie's performance so much that I felt like the scenes with her and America would have been way, like, I don't know. I wish I would have had more scenes of them and less scenes of Will Ferrell, I guess is what I'm trying to say, is, like, I would have preferred to see, if we were going to use that time for something, like, use that time for more development of Barbie rather than showing us whatever with Will Ferrell.
Yeah, I think, I feel like I don't even feel like he was even that big of a part. I think it's, I mean, it serves a lot more as a mechanism for the plot to move forward rather than, like, it doesn't really, it helps with some of the thematic things, but it is really, I think, more, like, to propel them to, like, do things or to motivate them to do the things that they're doing. There isn't a lot of, I don't know, integration of his character. For me, the biggest issue with the movie is kind of similar. I don't know. I just think the whole real world idea should have either been like really trimmed down or fleshed out more, because it felt kind of like a weird amount of that, where like they went to the real world and they did some stuff and then they came back, and like the whole connection with the real world and Mattel and like the Ken dream house, I think it just kind of overcomplicated things a little bit, where like I don't really feel like I need it. I liked for the most part how they kept it pretty, like they didn't try to explain it too much, like how like the toys connect to the people in real world. I just think that they could have even done less with like the company of Mattel. I think it just kind of overcomplicated it, and I think it would have been better if it was a little more disconnected from the real world.
Yeah, to me it felt like something they had to do, like you said, moving the plot forward or whatever, a plot device. Like, it felt like something they had to do, or like something that, rather than, I don't know, like it just felt like it felt so out of place to me in the story. Like you said, maybe it wasn't fleshed out enough or whatever, or maybe too much. Like, I just felt like there was this imbalance between what was happening in the real world scenes versus what happened in Barbie Land.
Yeah.
And I understand why she had to go to the real world, and I think that that's fine. But I just think that maybe there could have been a better way to do all of that. Because I think when it comes to a lot of the other stuff, I have some takes on Ken's sort of whatever. But I think that overall, like I liked Barbie. I liked the character of Barbie. I liked, you know, her arc and what she was learning about herself. I liked that ultimately what she learned about herself was through other women and like through the real world women, like through America and her daughter, who I don't even remember her character's name.
I don't remember her name. Yeah.
And then, you know, the lady she met at the bus stop, and then the lady from Mattel.
The lady that made Barbie. I forgot her name too.
Yeah,
that
was cool. Ruth.
I liked that. Ruth. That was her name. Correct.
Yeah, so I think that those, I really appreciated that. I really appreciated that Barbie's character development was through herself, but also through the guidance of these other women and seeing other women live their lives and stuff. I think that that was really beautifully done. I really appreciated that. Yeah, I think it's just a lot of the other stuff I felt like was too messy for me, or too not all the way there. Like, I just felt like we were right. Like, to me, it was like I was right there. And then I was having this question, which, like, I hate asking this question, but I was like, if it didn't have Greta Gerwig's name tied to it, like, let's, like, I mean, obviously it's her project, but I kind of was just like, if we didn't have a big name tied to it, if we didn't have, you know, whatever star power, and I know that makes the movie, but I was like, does it stand on its own? Or, like, do these kind of things make it better in people's eyes? Because it's, I was just asking myself that, as I kind of was like, I think parts of it don't, but I also was like, I hate to even say that question, but at the same time, I was like, if it was another woman director who was an unnamed woman director, I don't think it would, I think people may have rated it less than they did.
Well, like you said, I don't think a lot of the stuff would be there if it wasn't her. Like, I don't think that we would have had a lot of the scenes that we got, that obviously, like they've said, a lot of the scenes they had to really push for, or the montage at the end of like all the women, which are people that are like in the movie.
I did like the montage at the end.
So like, I think those things are, it's for me, I really feel like I can't ask that question, because it's like, I don't think it would be the same movie without her. Like I said, I did really like this movie. I love the beginning, which is basically the trailers.
Yeah, I loved the beginning.
And then I felt like when they went to the real world, I was like, I like some of this stuff. I think some of it's funny. Some of the stuff is funny, but it feels a little bit like underbaked. And then when they went back to the real world, I was not the real world. When they went back to Barbie Land, I was back in. So it was really only that kind of, I guess, like this in the first half, like the second fourth. And then when they went back to Barbie Land, I was all in again. I thought, I really loved the way that they showed the issues with like the systematic things that were put in place. So I really liked how they completely reversed the roles in the beginning. I thought that was very, very interesting. And then they re-reversed the roles when you come back. And so you can really see both ways that it works. And ultimately, which is why it's crazy that I think people are saying this movie is like anti-men. I mean, obviously those people are idiots, but I think the ultimate message of the movie is like that none of these kind of made up things that none of these things that people make up about like society or systematic ideas benefit really anyone. Like no one is really fully happy or able to like be themselves within these systems. And I really thought that was like in a blockbuster movie, a very like deep idea that was put, that was just like kind of baked in to the story. And I think is going to like really be, hopefully, I guess, open a lot of people's eyes to like the fact that a lot of these rules or these systems that we follow benefit no one. Like every people are miserable in both situations, especially like even like the Ken world, the Kens were miserable in that situation. And they're miserable when they're also trying to only like live their lives for someone else, right? I don't think that's ever, neither of those things are fulfilling. So I really loved that. And I, like you said, I really liked Barbie's character. I thought it was surprising, like went to a surprisingly deep place at the end with that montage. And like I said, I really think all those things are Greta Gerwig. I think taking the idea of Barbie and Ken and seeing it as a reversal of gender roles, that you can like see a world where gender roles are completely reversed and then you unreverse them so you can really see those different sides. And both people, like if you're seeing it from the man's point of view, you can see it from both sides. If you're from the woman's point of view, you can see it from both sides, whatever you're kind of trying to see it from. And I think that's such a smart way of like sneakily giving the audience the message that you're trying to push out there. And yeah, I thought that was honestly incredible. I really like that. And I think there's just, the movie's so funny. I love how creative it is in the dream sequence, or like, I don't know what they call it, like dream ballet sequence, I guess you would call it, with Ryan Gosling's song. And I, with the set design too, I really like how she talked about this a little in some of the interviews, how they didn't try to make it look real. Like they really leaned into like the manufactured look of everything, which is a very like 1960s, 70s film technique. So I loved that. I think with the real world too, like I know kind of jumping back to there, but the real world also I think really suffered because like you said, the cinematography is very plain, I guess is like the way I would say. And in Barbie Land, I think it works because there are so many colors. So it's really hard for like to have like a really colorful color palette, but they don't really change that up in the real world. So the real world looks very, the scenes in the real world look very gray and uninteresting. So it's like, I think the cinematography or the lack of like a visual style is pretty much made up for by like the color in the Barbie Land and like the set design. But when you take that out, yeah, like that's another reason why the real world just feels so like unfocused and also just like off, I guess. But like I said, other than that little section, and maybe that will even change with time because I've only seen this once, I am a big fan. Yeah, I don't really have anything else to say, I don't think. I bought the sweatshirt. I bought the Ken sweatshirt.
Yeah, I thought it in the theater. I was like, oh man, I wonder if they're selling that. And I almost bought it. And then I was like, I shouldn't be spending money right now.
Should we move to Oppenheimer then?
Yeah, let's.
Going from the world of pink and yellow and purple to the dark depths of World War II and mostly blue, because Christopher Nolan loves blue. But as with Tenet introduced a little bit of like red and orange. This movie introduces even more. So I'm very proud of Christopher Nolan for exploring other colors than blue and black. Real big deal for him. So this movie, yeah, obviously, what is it? His 12th movie? I think 11th, 12th?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I just added it to my ranking, so I kind of, I guess I could look, but Yeah, so he's pretty established, and he's such a weird figure, because, like, he's one of those where, like, obviously he's a great director, and, like, I would say, I, like, if someone asked me, and, like, I am technically a fan of Christopher Nolan, but I think saying you're a fan of Christopher Nolan has such, like, a connotation to it at this point, which is weird, but... So it's tough, I think, sometimes with his movies to really, like, or it's just tough with him, I guess, to really, like, embrace him, because I think you can get stereotyped into, like, a certain category of film bro, or at least you used to be. Maybe this movie will change that opinion. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I think that this one was kind of coined a film bro movie, but I think, to me, it doesn't seem
It doesn't really feel like an Inception or an Interstellar kind of thing.
Yeah, like, I mean, it really doesn't seem like to, I don't know. It seems outside of some of his other content to me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think since Dunkirk, so Dunkirk, Tenet, and this, he's kind of moved away from that feeling of, like, I don't know, just like you feel like you're like the juniors in high school are really going to love this one. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. Just because, like, either he's really interested in history, or, like, in Tenet, he's just, like, interested in, like, guys, like, hitting people with cheese graters, which, cool, fun, sounds
yeah.
good.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, I don't know, I wasn't really sure or didn't really have expectations about this one. I think a lot of times movies like this are hit or miss for me, both, like, long dramas and then also biopics I feel are often could go either way with a biopic. We've seen a lot of pretty not as good biopics in the last few years, and obviously I expect a lot from Nolan. I think Tenet was kind of one of his weak links, but was still had some very impressive things going for it.
Yeah, especially technically, I think he really, like, moved for... I watched, like, the behind-the-scenes of Tenet on... Because for some reason, I have, like, the Blu-ray. So I watched the behind-the-scenes, even though I don't like the movie that much. And I was very impressed, I guess, technically. It was one of those, like you were saying, with New Moon. A New Moon reference in the Oppenheimer episode. Where
yeah,
it's like, I feel like I'm watching a behind-the-scenes of a better...
Of a different
like,
movie.
A movie
yeah.
that I wish I liked, you know? So...
Yeah, so I really didn't know what to expect from this movie. I had thought that I would probably like it, but I wasn't entirely sure. So I saw this Sunday. I had to wait. I didn't get to do a double feature in a packed theater. But like most,
same, yeah.
Most packed theater I have been in since Endgame, I think.
Yeah, and also. Like, I was in an IMAX, and it was not an IMAX that had been redone to have, bigger reclining seats. So
sure.
you can fit a lot more in a row.
A lot more people.
And I was kind of up so that I would, like, look over the balcony, and it was, like, a sea of people. And the most I've seen in a theater that has also been, like, the most, like, quiet or, like, watching the movie. Like, I didn't hear, like, no one said anything. It was,
yeah.
like, the
yeah.
wildest experience.
I mean, there's, like, a few jokes that people laughed at, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, of course. Like, you react to the movie, but...
It was a really, really invested movie. No one said anything at all, and then at the very end, the movie ended, and the person behind me was like, that was horrible. I hated that. And I was like, okay.
No way. Bro. People clapped at mine, which I thought was a little odd, but like they had good intentions, you know? I was not
sure,
in the clapping
sure.
mood
you're,
at the end
yeah,
of this
yeah.
movie.
You're clapping for Nolan, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Not for the atomic bombs. Yeah, I've been excited for this movie for a while. I mean, low-key didn't know who this guy was until like 2 years ago when I heard about this movie.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard of him before. Like, I feel like I learned something about him in a history class. You know what I mean?
Homeschool moment. Yeah,
but
right.
I didn't know a lot. Like, I don't know his life story or anything. It's just like, oh, you know, a question on the thing. Like, who's this person in history? You know, like a question on a
right.
test.
Of course, of course.
So it's very, I don't know. It's a very interesting perspective.
Yeah.
A very interesting, I find scientists story is pretty cool because I don't understand.
That's why you're a big fan of The Theory of Everything. It's your favorite movie, actually.
Yes. That is why The Theory of Everything is... I was going to make the same joke, but I was going to go the Imitation Game route.
Oh, yes. That's a better movie than Theory of Everything.
I don't understand science at all. Science was one of my worst subjects in school. I'm really, really bad at it. I found this very palatable, though.
I found it very
his storytelling very, very impressive.
Well, especially after Tenet, which is like Tenet was incomprehensible.
Yeah. But the levels at which I should not have understood anything that happened in this movie.
Yeah,
but
I definitely did.
I don't know how he did it because I'm literally so dumb. Like, I literally don't understand anything science related, but I literally was like, huh? Like,
I could be a quantum physicist,
maybe I should be a quantum physicist. No, I think overall, I mean, you look at the 3-hour runtime and you're like, ugh, like you just don't know, because I've been in so many movies are long these days. We've gone back to old Hollywood. We're running the 3-hour movies. And there's been quite a few in the last few years that you watch and you're like, like, when is this going to end?
Especially this year. There's been a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. But somehow in this movie, like, I think I checked my clock. Not because I was checking, I was just trying to see what time it was. Someone was calling me, so my phone was buzzing on silent in my lap.
No one heard it.
It was in silence, so I was silencing the phone.
It was actually right when the bomb went off and the silence was there. Yeah. And it was like,
that would have been horrible. No, it was not like that. But so that was the only time I looked at my clock, and it was like 2 hours in, and I was like, whoa. And even when it was over, my dad and I both were like, that was, like, I can't believe we just sat there for 3 hours, because it did not feel like that at all.
I agree, yeah.
Everything about this movie is impressive to me. I give it 4.5 stars. I finished the movie and then immediately bought a ticket to see it again, to the 70mm screening.
That's when you know it's a good movie. Yeah.
Like, I finished the movie and I looked at showtimes for it again.
I have to be with Oppenheimer again. I've got to go see him again.
I think that one thing we could probably talk about that's not would not be a spoiler is I think his sound design was a lot better in this one.
I agree. A lot of
people were concerned about his sound design. People have said Nolan is very mumblecore. Tenet is very privy to this, where you're kind of like trying to be like, what are they saying? What are they saying? I need subtitles.
Don't try to understand it. I just don't know.
I don't know what the vibes are. But I don't think, even in a theater with pretty shitty speakers, I think that I had no issues following any of the dialogue specifically.
I thought
that there were a lot of very interesting uses of sound. In this, when he gives his speech, there's a scene where there's some great use of sound, some other kind of
just incredible
sort of
scene.
Artistic cuts where I don't even know how you would explain it. Sort of it cuts from a real life scene of his subjective memory of these events, and then we'll kind of cut to sort of our experimental abstract.
Yeah,
scenes
especially
of
in the beginning.
Things.
It's crazy opening 30 minutes.
And I think even that sound design was flipping between the two was very impressive.
Yeah, I agree. I think the first hour really feels like just unrelenting. The images are just like flying. There's music like basically the entire time, like just like the score that's like always swelling. And so like,
great
the
score.
Momentum, it's a great score. I'm so glad. I mean, Hans Zimmer is a good composer, okay? People are, like, trying to hate on him right now. Like, okay, he's a good composer, guys. Don't make yourself look like idiots. But I'm really glad that I feel like Ludwig Göransson, even though I didn't love Tenet, I think his music brought such a cool energy to that movie that was not really in a Christopher Nolan film before. And it's the same thing for this, and it really makes it modernizes his movies in, like, a cool way. So I loved that. Like you said, the sound, I felt like there was times where like my chest was like like I could feel my chest like rumbling. Like,
okay, I did not have that experience because the speaker system is not good in my theater.
But you will.
I did think that it was a very immersive viewing experience, both in the way it connects all your senses, which sounds so nerdy, like, oh my god, Oppenheimer,
the
sound, like
the taste.
Yes, Oppenheimer, like, 4D, I tasted the atoms of the bomb myself.
I licked Oppenheimer's cheek. yeah, I think it. My so I gave it 4.5 to. I guess okay. I won't get into why yet. Any more like non-spoiler stuff? Like performances, amazing as usually.
Performances
in his
were
movies.
Incredible.
Cillian Murphy, I think, I feel like, I haven't seen his whole filmography, obviously. He must have some, like, really big leading roles, but I feel like, for me, I haven't seen him.
Well, he was in, like, it was him who was in Peaky Blinders, right?
I did not watch Peaky Blinders.
Okay, I didn't
so
either,
I
but I heard he was great in that.
Yes, but for me, it's like, I feel like he's such a great character. Every time I've seen him, he's really been just like a really great character actor that like is in like 5 or 6 scenes in a movie. But in this one, I like had never seen him in a movie like this where like he's in almost every scene, or like his presence is felt in every scene at least. And he just has such a command over the movie.
Yeah, he did amazing too. I think he'll be right now the front runner.
This movie is the front runner.
Yeah,
for
I think
me
so too. But
picture.
I don't think there's anyone else that's totally in this race yet. I think he's the clear front runner for this.
Ezra Miller is definitely number 2.
Oh yeah, they're up there.
and Harrison Ford.
And Harrison
for
Ford.
Destiny.
My bad. Yeah. Maybe he'll get a Lifetime Achievement Award. This Oscars.
Crazy,
can I make
actually.
That prediction now?
Sure.
Can I make the prediction now that Harrison Ford's
sure,
gonna
yeah.
get a Lifetime Achievement Award at the 2024 Oscars?
They'll play the Indiana Jones music and he'll come out like his whip, and like they'll make a snake joke, like they'll have like a fake snake.
Yeah, I believe it. I can see it right now. I feel like we're prophesying the future.
Jimmy Kimmel's like, what's that over there, Harrison? And it's like a snake, and
like
he's
a rubber
like,
snake, and then he pulls it himself with a little string. Anyway, I think a lot of the other cast in this is also just very impressive. Like the people who are barely in any scenes or have smaller roles.
Josh Peck, like who knew?
Yeah, Josh Peck did great. I mean, Gary Oldman was in it for not even 5 minutes, like maybe even 3 minutes. And he did great.
Matt Damon, I thought, was like for a surprising amount of time, and like I thought he killed it.
He was good. I think that Matt Damon has fallen off a bit in the past. Like, I think that like Bourne movies were his peak. We Bought a Zoo should have gotten an Oscar for that.
Well, you really came around when he was like using like the F slur, right?
Yes,
or, like, he said he
yeah.
wanted to. So that was he on the upswing.
He's on the upswing, for sure. I forgot about that.
Everybody was like, his kids, like, he was like,
my kids, like, he was saying it like it was a good thing.
No way, Matt Damon. Thank you.
Yeah, I thought that he was great in this. I was so pleasantly surprised. I think Robert Downey Jr., I mean, I feel like he's someone who, it's not that hard to say that he's actually a very good actor.
Yeah, I just haven't seen him in a while, like in a movie like this. So it was really cool
to
see. Yeah,
it's
hard
to separate him from Iron Man at this point. I think it's the same thing.
Especially at the end, a little of Iron Man was peeking through.
Yeah,
I was like,
a little bit of Tony Stark came out.
A little Tony Stark.
But yeah, he did incredible. I thought Florence Pugh, obviously, I think she was underutilized in this, actually.
Yeah, I felt like she was like missing a scene. I think even Rami Malek, I don't know how to say his first name.
Yeah.
Honestly, kind of crushed it.
And I'm a Rami Malek hater, and I was like, you know what? He did good in this.
Bernard from Santa Claus?
Yeah.
Crushed it.
Yeah,
guy was great.
And I think what's so good about this, and what's his face? Who's what's his name who was in the Caesar movie? Who played the guy the guy who was with not Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr.
Alden, the Han Solo.
Yes, who fucking sucked in Han Solo. But he was
Alden and thing.
Yeah, and he was really, really good in Hail Caesar.
He was great.
And when
Hail
we
Caesar.
Watched him in that, that's when I was like, huh, wait, this guy, maybe Solo was just a bad script, which it was.
People have been trying to reclaim Solo on X, no, not Twitter.
Absolutely not.
It is a no for
horrendous
me.
Horrendous movie. No, but I thought acting across from Robert Downey Jr. and being able to still like keep your chops and give what I thought was a very good performance as well. I mean, I just, some of these younger guys, like just acting with literally some of like, I don't know, some of the greatest actors, you know, yeah. It just is like, how did it happen? I literally can't think of one performance in this movie that I don't think was a good performance.
Yeah. Emily Blunt. Great scene.
Incredible.
Too.
Like, and even she's amazing. She's someone that I really do like. I think that she's a great actress. I think she was good in Quiet Place. You know, Jungle Cruise, role of a lifetime.
Acting across from Dwayne Johnson. Imagine if Dwayne Johnson was in this movie.
But I mean, apart from Quiet Place, like, I think a lot of times she's not really taken as a serious actor, like, because she doesn't do a lot of dramas like this. Like, she very much is kind of a comedic
like
family actor.
Action or comedy.
Yeah, like, she's very, I mean, Mary Poppins Returns, she's great in that, but it's so different than this, and I was very, very impressed with her performance. I think I'm hoping that she'll get a supporting, like, I could see her in the supporting actress category easily, because I think her kind of role is the perfect role for supporting nomination, where it's like, she really does add an element to those scenes with Cillian Murphy.
Let's go to some spoilers quickly, just so we can kind of touch on anything else we want to talk about. The reason I, at least upon one watch, you know, this movies like this are so hard because there's so much
to remember,
so
even
dense, and like on a first watch too with any movie, you really don't know where it's going. So that's, I think, the hardest thing for me, because that's one of the things that I had an issue with, at least at one point, was like the pacing of the story, specifically because obviously you feel like the whole movie you're building up to the bomb exploding, or like seeing the bomb explosion. That's like you go in like, okay, that's going to be a crazy scene to watch. And so I think I really felt that propulsion of the narrative until that moment. And that was, I think, one of the best scenes of the year so far, was the bomb exploding. And just long enough, because like I was like, okay, what they're going to do is it's going to be silent, and then the boom is going to come. It's going to be like a shock. But it was just long enough that even I was like, I guess maybe they won't do something like that. And then they did it.
And then they did it.
So that was great. But after that, I felt like there was like a little, maybe like 20 minutes where I was a little unsure, or like I felt like there wasn't a lot of momentum. And I was like, okay, I didn't look at my watch. I was like, how much longer is left? So like, are we almost done? So it was like getting that ramp up back into what is actually like the last hour of the movie, which is the hearings and all of that, which I think after it kind of kicks into gear, I was back on. But it was like kind of in that 20 minutes between the bomb going off and like it kind of getting even more exciting for the hearings that I was like just thrown off a little bit, just because I felt like the rabbit was out of the hat, I guess. Like the trick was, the bomb was like the thing, and that had already happened. So I was like, okay, what else? Are we descending now, like until like the conclusion, or we have more coming? And we had more, and I thought like the actual conclusion was very good. Maybe it was just because I was you're going in expecting to see the bomb, so maybe if I rewatch it and I know like the arc more, it might work better.
Sure. I did not feel that at all, because I didn't care about the bomb. And so
I was really looking forward to the bomb.
Yeah. So
I'm a big fan of atomic bombs, as everyone knows.
I think that we're going to get canceled. This is our most controversial episode. I think that I don't know. I've seen a few people say that, and I think I just didn't feel that at all. I don't know if it was just that, like, my buildup wasn't really the bomb.
Your buildup was seeing Florence Pugh naked, and that happened really early. So it was like, yes. Man, where is there left to go?
Unfortunately, once I saw Florence Pugh naked, I was like, well, what I was anticipating. Like I said, we're gonna get canceled.
This is the longest. This is the funniest episode of all time.
No, I think I genuinely, and maybe this is just a me thing. I've said before, action movies are hit and miss for me. I think I was so invested in his story that to me the bomb was really a secondary story, which sounds so silly because the whole movie is about the bomb.
That was what he was looking for. Yeah, so but like, I felt like he had accomplished his goal.
I think with the framing device that they used of having the black and white storyline, like going through with also alternating between his sort of hearing or his what do you call the thing, his board
trial?
Hearing trial thing. I mean, it wasn't really a trial, but like Cillian Murphy's questioning for
his
appeal,
questioning, and then Robert Downey Jr.'s like promotion thing.
I think if it didn't use that framing device, I may have felt what you're talking about, but I think it was so interconnected enough for me throughout the movie that I didn't really feel the separate chunks of it. Like, I do know, I can distinctly tell where the three acts are.
Which is impressive, actually, that you can feel the acts, but the movie is so, when you think of it, like, all over the place, but it is very, like, pretty, like, distinct, like, okay, act one, act two, act three.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I was thoroughly engaged the whole time.
Did you have like a specific reason you didn't go five, or like just because you don't usually go five in the
this is gonna be the most petty thing you've ever heard. There was a specific cut when they were in the hallway. It was in the third act, and it was after he pretty much got, like Jason Clarke's character, that's his name, right? The lawyer guy who's, like, mean, the dickhead.
Yeah. He was great, yeah.
I mean, he did great. He was
Bob,
I mean...
Bob, whatever, Rob Bob?
Yeah,
Bob
Robert, Bobbert, Triple B?
Bobbers? Triple B?
Anyway, it was after that scene when he kind of was, like, feeling like he was getting owned. They were in the hallway. The elf from Santa Claus was there,
Santa Claus.
Bernard, and he was talking, and then the lawyer and Cillian Murphy, and then they're in the hallway, and they're standing there talking. There was this really, really quick cut, and it was like, because everything else was slow cuts, you know what I mean? Like lingering cuts.
Yeah.
And there was this weird scene. You have to, when you watch it again, I need you to look out for the scene, but they're in the hallway.
Okay.
And there's two people talking. And instead of having a reaction talking or letting the person talk, it went cut, 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 cut in between the two people. And I literally, in that moment, I was like, 4.5 stars. I was like, I can't do it.
My.
That was a horrible cut. I hated it. And I know that that's so petty and pretentious of me, and I might raise it to 5 stars after I see it again.
Yeah, I feel like it's really hard to rate for 5 stars
but
on a one
in
watch,
that moment,
especially a movie like
in
this.
In that moment, I literally was like, how? Why? Why did Nolan let this? Like, did Nolan see this? Did he see it?
He watched Bohemian Rhapsody and was like, guys,
like
I got a great idea.
Bohemian Rhapsody cut. Like, it literally, the way, I need to be validated in this. I need to know that someone else saw this same cut that I did.
I'll look for it.
Look for it. It's when they're in the hallway and the two people are talking and it cuts back and forth. It's really, really wild. It's just like, and then it ends and that's it. And it doesn't do it again. And it was only in that one scene in the whole movie. And I literally felt like they like accidentally scrolled past it and forgot to like extend one of the clips. You know what I mean? Like, they accidentally left a clip in. Like, that's what it felt like to me. So, anyway, that was what my reasoning for this being 4.5 stars.
Nolan, you fucked up. You're out. You're done.
Yeah, you're done. You're done, Christopher Nolan.
No more editing for you.
No more. No editing award. You're done. I think
was this the same editor as Tenet? It was.
I was going to say, it seemed like it. It felt like a similar editing style. I do think, though, apart from that one random cut, which I'm half joking, but I'm also really not joking about it, I think the rest of the movie just is absolutely incredible pacing. It just is so impressive to me, because I find biopics are usually very boring or have very laggy parts. And for a story that really, like, I mean, you said the bomb to most people would be the most interesting part. I find it very impressive that he was able to just make the rest of this guy's life so interesting.
Right. Because if you want to tell, like, if you want to tell a story, it can't end with the bomb. So you've got to find the way to, like, bridge that gap. It was a very well mapped out story and script, and I look forward to seeing it again with the whole picture, I guess, like, knowing where everything's going and, like, seeing the, because I think his movies, I mean, I'm not the first person to say this, really do reward, like, multiple watches and kind of being able to, like, see different things, because, like, once you know the ending or you know, like, where it's going, you can see, like, how you're gonna get there. And I think his movies are best when you do get to that ending and you kind of see everything. So I think that's why The Prestige is his best movie. And, like, that is when, in Memento, like, he likes to do that thing where, like, weird framing devices of this, he doesn't really edit chronologically. And I think it works best in situations like this when you get to the end and you're like, oh, that's why he did that. That's why we've had all these things in the beginning, and now it makes sense. And so you can go back and watch it. I think it doesn't work when you get to the end of a movie like Tenet for the second time, and you're like, couldn't tell you what just happened. Or Interstellar, where it's like, I think Interstellar is a pretty good movie, but there's, I think the way that it's edited, it just doesn't make sense as much to the story. So this is one, though, where I was very impressed. And it, like, just is nice to see. It's nice to see a plan come together.
Wow.
You know, nice to see it all come together at the end. I'm excited this movie is really popular. I think it's crazy that people are like, man, I can't wait to go see Oppenheimer. And I'm just thinking, like, I mean, it sounds great. But, like, these people, like, I'm like, the last movie you saw was, like, Top Gun Maverick. Like, I don't know what is drawing you to see Oppenheimer, but
I'm not mad about it.
I just feel like it's funny, like, that this movie is having, like, this much pull. I feel like that's all I have to say. I am not going to reference the online discourse at all, because I have no desire.
So I ranked this is now my number one movie of the year.
This is my number two behind
Past Lives.
Okay, which
I haven't seen it yet.
It's a very different. It's so hard for me to, like, compare those two.
Very different.
But this could be number one, though.
So I have this at number one of features ranked, and then I have it in Christopher Nolan ranked. I have it at number two. I put it under The Prestige. It's been a long time since I've seen The Prestige.
It hits. I watched it a year or so ago.
We used to watch it a lot for some reason when we were younger. I don't know why. It was a big movie for us, though.
That's iconic of you guys.
Yeah, like, we were very into The Prestige for some reason.
That's so funny. It's a good movie.
Like, I have vivid memories of watching this in, like, middle school, The Prestige. Anyway, so I have The Prestige ranked above it right now. I think I need to revisit The Prestige. Do you own it?
I don't. I need to. They just haven't. Okay. I don't think they've re-released it. And the Blu-ray cover is awful. Okay. Like, I found it, like, at thrift stores. Not it.
So we need a Prestige 4K release.
That seems like also, I know we say this about literally every movie, but that seems like a good Criterion choice. Because I think his only other Criterion is Following, which makes sense. But I feel like that's one where it's like there's, like, it would be really hard to secure rights for, like, Inception or Interstellar. Obviously, they can't do Batman. I think that one would fit right in. I think it's a very great movie, obviously. It's my number one, too. I have Oppenheimer at four. Memento probably should be two, but I have like Prestige, Dark Knight, and Memento above it. But I could probably get to the top three. I think it's definitely more well constructed than like Inception or Interstellar, so I think it's above those. And then like the other ones, I think like have good qualities, but I feel like he has like six good movies, and the other six are like kind of good. So it's definitely the top six at number four right now. Question of the week: is building an atomic bomb worth
ethically,
it? Ethically correct.
Question number two: is it ethically correct to have all male CEOs in your Mattel company?
But they had two women.
Is that ethically correct?
And he's the son of a mother.
Is it ethically correct to give a Barbie a vagina when she becomes a human? Good questions.
These questions
good
and
questions.
More.
These questions and more on Instagram. No, our real question of the week.
I guess, yeah. I mean, what's your favorite Christopher Nolan movie? I think would be interesting. I think a lot of people have
Seed.
A favorite.
Yeah. What is your favorite Christopher Nolan film?
Is it The Prestige, which is the correct answer?
Is it The Dark Knight Rises, which would be the absolute worst answer that you could give?
Yeah, even though I have ones ranked lower than that, that would be the worst answer you could give.
Yeah.
Like, I would respect
Tenet. That was your
Tenet
number one. I would respect
Rises.
Tenet as a number one. I would respect
Insomnia would be a weird one.
I haven't seen that one.
And Following. But everything else, like, I can see an argument for Interstellar. I can see an argument for even Batman Begins. Like,
Batman Begins.
Dark Knight Rises is really
Cillian Murphy's
not
in that.
He is. You're
he
scared
plays
of him
the,
in that
I,
one.
He's, yeah, literally fucking terrifying.
Maybe now you could watch it, though, because now he's just like a little guy.
No,
now
because
he's,
it's literally...
Now he's just like...
It's literally...
Now he's just like Oppenheimer.
All in the mask. It's that mask, the scarecrow mask. I can't do it. I can't do it.
So let us know what your favorite Christopher Nolan movie is, now that we have basically made fun of every other option you can give.
Yes.
On Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, website, everything's
Spotify,
in the show notes.
Spotify, yeah, we got it all.
Spotify.
Let us know in Spotify, mate.
Hit us up on the Spotify, and we will then on Wednesday be releasing a new episode covering the fourth movie
of the Twilight franchise. Breaking Dawn,
franchise.
Part 1. Franchise.
Yeah, we watched. We said in the last episode we would decide if this needed...
It needed
two episodes for
it needed one. It needed one.
Breaking Dawn Part 1 needs its
Breaking
own episode.
Breaking Dawn Part 1. Oh my God. We have so many things to say.
So many
I'm so
thoughts.
Excited for this episode. Maybe I'll watch it again before.
Honestly, I might. You know, maybe even
I
just
do,
a couple
I
scenes.
Will. I do think I'll break out the Blu-ray and see what kind of behind the scenes. Or maybe I'll watch it with the director commentary track. I wonder what the commentary is on it. Okay, behind the scenes with a 6-part making of documentary.
No way.
Viewable in both standard and picture-in-picture modes. Relive the memories with Edward and Bella's personal wedding video. Get a
Love
glimpse
it.
Into Jacob's destiny. Plus an audio commentary with director Bill Condon.
Iconic.
So I will be listening to the director's commentary, I think.
So yeah, we'll have that episode out on Wednesday at 10 a.m. as usual. Wow, can't believe we did it. Barbenheimer. What a time.
Barbenheimer. The weekend of the year. The weekend of the decade.
Truly.
It's the weekend
so far
of the decade, mate.
There's not been a lot of weekends this decade that have been like this
good,
decade has some
good.
Pretty
We've had some
bad
pretty
weekends.
Shit weekends of 2023, and this was not one of them. This was the
this
best one. We had Barbenheimer. It was brilliant. Whether or not I liked Barbie as much as other people did, I think that it was a brilliant experience regardless.
Yeah, even just like the excitement of the movies
yeah,
people are
yeah.
is just awesome.
Yeah. Love it. Love everything about it. The movies are back, baby.
Movies are back. Great to be back at the movies.
Thank you, Tom Cruise and Scientology.
I think that's it. Are we good?
We're good.
All right. So thank you all for listening. And until next time, I'm here to see my gynecologist.
And I am Depression Barbie.
And we're your secondhand
film critics.
Film cakes.
Hi, Barbie.